Welcome to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast updating you on the latest IT news to come out of Redmond. In this week's episode, Microsoft appeals the Word judgment, Microsoft releases IE8, System Center VM Manager R2 evaluation, and Exchange 2010 RC. The Department of Justice clears the Oracle and Sun deal, and big iron workers make big bucks. We'll get right to it after this quick musical interlude right here on Redmond Radio. Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. And as always and every week, I welcome your feedback on this show at mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105media.com. And I'd certainly love to hear from you, so feel free to send me an email or record a quick message or a shout-out by phone by calling me at 949-265-1564. Naturally, that's in Irvine, so it's a toll call for most of you. You can also catch the show on redmondradio.podbean.com if you want to download the show automatically via iTunes. The Podbean version of the show always includes more information, basically contests, that are only available by looking at the description page at redmondradio.podbean.com. Redmond Radio listeners via the Podbean version can find out how to win an mcpmag.com cap this week, so check it out. In case you were wondering, no one won a cap last week, so your chances are incredibly good if you listen and enter now. Listen to the show at redmondradio.podbean.com. All right, let's get right to it. First up, researchers from Redmond last week unveiled an anti-hacking concept that can help track hackers or malicious content to origin servers. The host tracker program introduced at the SIGCOM 2009 conference in Spain is a work in progress. The goal of the project is to de-anonymize the internet through the ability to host servers with 99% accuracy. Host Tracker is designed to unmask would-be hackers who take advantage of anonymizing techniques by cross-referencing internet protocol traffic to identify the true origin. Redmond's representatives said the Host Tracker system relies on application-level events, in this case, Internet Explorer browser sessions, to automatically infer host IP bindings. The researchers ran some initial tests by analyzing a month's worth of data from an email server, roughly 330 gigabytes, to ascertain from the samples who may have been responsible for sending out certain types of spam. They studied some 550 million user IDs and 220 million IP addresses and matched timestamps from message transmissions or email logons. From a practical perspective, the researchers said they hope that the program will result in better defenses against server-bound online attacks, spam campaigns, adware, and other malware that is dependent on HTML code to execute properly. Further, Microsoft thinks this could be a boon for third-party security firms and security administrators at the enterprise level by giving them the ability to block certain hosts from sending messages, as well as the ability to use this data as a basis for IT auditing and forensic analysis of messaging and network systems. Microsoft last week formally appealed a judgment that was issued a week ago that would require the company to stop selling Microsoft Word within the U.S. The judgment came following a jury trial that found aspects of Microsoft Word actually violated the patent of the Canadian software firm i4i as it relates to what's being called custom XML. In the ruling, East Texas District Court Judge Leonard Davis ordered Microsoft to stop selling versions of Word that have the capability of opening in XML, .docx or .docm file, which is an XML file containing custom XML, within 60 days. He also ordered Microsoft to pay i4i $240 million in damages, $40 million of which was granted because the jury found the patent violation to be willful. Late last week, Microsoft filed for an emergency stay with the district court. In its filing Tuesday with the U.S. Federal Court of Appeals Federal Circuit last week, Microsoft also asked for an emergency stay while the appeal is being heard. According to the case document, the first oral arguments in the appeal will be held September 23rd. Internet Explorer 8 will arrive in an update roll-up via Windows Server Update Services this week, according to Microsoft. IT pros who use WSUS and who have turned on automatic updates for roll-ups in WSUS will get the IE8 update starting on Tuesday. But if that proves problematic because some desktops should not get the upgrade, Microsoft describes a workaround. Simply turn off the auto-approve option for update roll-ups before August 25th. Even after that date, there's still a way to block the IE8 upgrade. Microsoft prescribes the following steps in a blog. First, synchronize your WSUS server. Second, decline the Internet Explorer 8 updates. And third, if business requirements are to auto-approve update rollup packages, you can re-enable auto-update for update rollups. Microsoft offers a toolkit to block the delivery of IE8, but it comes with a catch. The toolkit is designed to only block the delivery of IE8 via automatic update, as well as via the Microsoft Update and Windows Update websites. The toolkit is not designed for users of WSUS, Software Update Services, or Systems Management Server. Users of small business server products who elected to install them using the default setting will still have to manually approve their delivery of IE8 in the SBS console or WSUS console, according to an SBS blog. Microsoft officials tend to emphasize better security and performance with IE8, especially over its older products like IE6, which shipped with Windows XP. But IT pros still have many applications that depend on using an older version of the browser, hence the need to block the upgrade. Microsoft on Monday announced the availability of System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2008 R2 in evaluation version. The evaluation version is good for 180 days. Microsoft's blogs describe the new data center management solution for virtual machines as being at the release to manufacturing stage. Essentially, it's a final product release for Microsoft's vendor partners. General availability will start on October 1st for customers who've purchased Microsoft's volume licensing. Microsoft has been testing SCVMM 2008 R2 in conjunction with Windows Server 2008 R2. Microsoft released the RTM of Windows Server 2008 R2 in July and made it available to TechNet and MSDN subscribers and volume licensing customers earlier this month. According to the product's description, SCVMM 2008 R2 works with the following operating systems: Windows Server 2008 Data Center, Windows Server 2008 Enterprise, Windows Server 2008 R2, and Windows Server 2008 Standard. SCVMM 2008 R2 also works with competitor VMware's virtualization product. Microsoft's Server and Tools blog states that one key additional feature of SCVMM 08 R2 is the ability to manage VMs running on VMware vSphere version 4.0. Earlier last week, Microsoft made the Microsoft Exchange Server 2010 release candidate available on TechNet. According to a blog post from the Microsoft support engineer Jared Serafin, the link may not work for everyone yet, but it will soon. The RC follows the beta versions and is typically Microsoft's last step before the release to manufacturing version of the software. The beta debuted back in April. Exchange 2010 is a major update of Microsoft's flagship email server, with Redmond touting its new unified communications, compliance, and software as a service capabilities, plus improved performance and reliability. RC software runs on Windows Server 2008, R2, or SP2, and can coexist with both Exchange 2007 SP2, as scheduled to be released by the end of August, and Exchange 2003. It's not compatible with Exchange 2007 without the service packs. Before we continue, how about a short message from 1105 Media? VS Live is the educational conference for the VisualStudio.net developer, looking for up-to-date, relevant technical content on today's most critical topics. Each VS Live conference offers a unique set of topics designed to provide cutting-edge techniques to help you solve development challenges today and help you build the next-generation applications for tomorrow. VS Live takes place in Orlando, Florida, October 4th through the 7th. Find out more and register at vslive.com. That's VSLIVE.com. And welcome back to Redmond Radio. Before we continue with more news, here's a segment I'd like to call IT Web Gems. If you have one that you'd like to share with our listeners, just email me and send me a link. An IT Web Gem could be anything that's on the website that's IT related. Basically, you can look up things like in /dot or whatever. But if somebody sends you a link, that's probably more preferable, because that way you're getting something that's a little bit more fresh to you rather than just going out and searching that stuff. I go out to /dot and some other sites. Let's see what else is there. Engadget. I have some Google alerts set with the words IT, and then basically I get some stuff sent over to me. One of the better places to go check out some IT web gems is actually at redmondreport.com. We have a bunch of stuff over there, just constantly combing all the sites. But anyhow, let's hit some IT web gems now. First, happy birthday to Windows 95. It was 14 years ago this Monday that Microsoft released one of its most popular OSs, which introduced the right-click menu, among many other innovations. The product managed to stay in circulation until Microsoft finally retired it at the end of 2002. On the same day in 1998, the first human trial of an RFID chip went live in the United Kingdom. I'd also like to make a shout-out to Pepsi, introduced on August 28, 1898. The pharmacist Caleb Bradham introduced Bradstreak some years earlier, and it was that drink that was renamed and re-released in 1898. What makes this tech-related? Well, I'm among many of you who sit at my desk at work and drink this stuff to stay alert the whole day, as well as coffee and maybe a brisk walk every once in a while. In the interest of making this a contest, I want to find out what your soda preference is. On the subject line of an email to me, just put Pepsi, Coke, or even Jolt and send me that email to mdomingo@1105media.com. That's mdomingo at 1105media.com. You might just win an mcpmag.com baseball cap if you're that random selection among all email entries. Like this or any contest, this one ends at the end of the week in which the podcast is first posted, which in this case, this week, is midnight, August 30th. From last week's contest, I'd still like to know if anyone knows what BTK stands for. Just curious to find out if anyone listened last week to the Podbean version of this podcast. All right, let's get back to some news. First, a consortium of IT security companies formed last year under the auspices of the IEEE Standards Association is rolling out an XML malware metadata scheme to improve data sharing within the industry. Said Jeff Green, Senior Vice President of McAfee Avert Labs and Chairman of the Industry Connections Security Group, "We are dealing with a huge explosion of malware. While hackers and criminals have collaborated to create a sophisticated environment for the development of malware as a service, security companies have focused on silo solutions rather than cooperation," said Green. "Industry is behind the curve," he added. "The new scheme provides a standardized way to share data to speed analysis and prioritization," Green said. ICSG is the first to be formed under the Industry Connections Program established by the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers to provide a safe harbor for industry collaboration. The program is something of an incubator to ease the development of new technical standards. Initial ICSG members include AVG Technologies, McAfee, Microsoft, Sophos, Symantec, and Trend Micro. Industry standards for technology provide a way for companies to enable common features and functionality across a variety of interoperable products, which can spur innovation and benefit both vendors and customers. This typically is done within a formal working group overseen by a recognized standards body, such as the IEEE. But because standards development can require collaboration among competing companies, complex intellectual property and antitrust issues have to be worked out, and that can take a year or more before a working group can do substantive work. The Industry Connections Program provides a safe environment for industry collaboration before creating a formal standards working group, so that a consensus can be developed from needs and goals in addressing issues. The program has developed a legal framework for cooperation, with output copyrighted by IEEE and spelling out participants' requirements. The framework is simpler and more flexible than that for a formal standards-making project. A group of security professionals first met in October to discuss the challenges posed by the group in the volume and types of malware they're facing. The rapid growth in malicious code illustrates the growing sophistication of the underground economy supported by it. The number of unique pieces of malware identified jumped from 125,000 in 2006 to 1.5 million in 2008. There have been 1.2 million pieces identified in the first half of 2009, according to McAfee. Security companies already share threat information among themselves with some outside groups in government, academia, and law enforcement, but in a largely unstructured way. The group chose the IEEE as their umbrella for its work creating a formal, rational method for sharing data. Some of the member committees have begun using the scheme, and the group would like to see it expanded to include partners such as government agencies and internet service providers, said Green. IEEE hopes to see additional groups formed under the program, which could produce standards, proposals, white papers, specialized tools, online databases, and data feeds for their communities. Oracle is now providing connectivity to the latest versions of its flagship database to .NET developers using Microsoft's ASP.NET programming model for creating dynamic web applications. Oracle Data Access Components 11.1.0.6.21, that's a long one, with Oracle Developer is available in three iterations. One supports Microsoft's Visual Studio 2008 and Server Explorer, Microsoft's tool for letting developers create, view, and control database connections and their contents. Oracle said the new ODAC release includes ASP.NET providers, source control, and user-defined types. The second version is similar to the first, but it's for those who don't use Visual Studio, according to Oracle. And the third supports Xcopy deployment and offers the smallest ODAC installation configuration. Oracle said because ASP.NET includes service providers that store state within databases, data should be available within applications as well as the web servers. The company added that .NET developers familiar with ASP.NET providers should find the Oracle providers straightforward for developers to learn since they share a common schema and APIs with existing ASP.NET providers. They integrate seamlessly with the existing ASP.NET services and controls, similar to other ASP.NET providers, according to Oracle. Speaking of Oracle, the U.S. Department of Justice has given the green light for Oracle to proceed with its $7.4 billion deal to acquire Sun Microsystems. The European Commission is expected to make its ruling by September 3rd. Apparently, the DOJ brushed aside concerns over the fate of the Java community process, despite inquiring about it last month. That inquiry was not expected to be a deal-breaker, noted Burton Group analyst Ann Thomas Maines at the time. And finally, top IT managers who work with mainframes can expect to earn significantly more than other IT executives, according to the latest salary survey by ESJ.com. ESJ.com is owned by the same parent company as Midrin Radio. Of ESJ.com's readers, a mix of mainframe, data center, server, and other enterprise IT professionals, CIOs and vice presidents in mainframe environments reported the highest average base salary of $232,700 per year. Those with the same title who work on AIX Unix environments averaged $173,500, followed by $148,600 for those in mid-range environments and $114,600 in non-mainframe Windows environments. With other IT management positions with titles such as IS Director, Data Center Manager, or Network Manager, those in mid-range environments average the highest salaries with $158,500, followed by mainframe at $111,750. Those with AIX Unix expertise came in at $101,200 and Windows networking at $87,300. In general, the survey found that the average CIO and vice president salary for 2009 is $150,340, up slightly over 2008's average of $149,000. But the average bonus earned with these titles dropped from $28,500 to $18,000 this year. Of the eight management positions covered in the survey, six of them saw the average base salary rise. The two that declined are networking manager and help desk support manager. IT managers and enterprise architects also reported a higher average bonus versus the previous year. The complete salary survey can be found over at ESJ.com. And guess what? That's this week's episode. Before we go, I'd like to say thanks once again to all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program, especially those who pass this show on to their colleagues. I'm Michael Domingo. I'll chat with you next week right here on Redmond Radio.